Welcome to the second series of the Kintai Way podcast. In the previous series, my blind dog Jed and I walked the Kintai Way and spoke to people along the route. In these episodes, we're branching out a little to speak to interesting people or visit interesting places in the area. This podcast has been made possible thanks to a contribution from our wonderful Beach Clean group through Grab Argyle funding. Friends of the Kintai Way ensure beach sections of our long-distance route are kept clear and clean of plastic or rubbish, remaining wild and beautiful for everyone. If you would like to help, get in touch via thekintaiway@gmail.com. In this episode, I'm going to talk about whiskey. It's an odd choice for a person with self-imposed teetotalism due to a problematic relationship with alcohol, but Campbelltown's whiskey distilleries are amongst the best in the world, according to people who know about such things, and the numerous awards that say best in the world on them. I went to Glen Scotia for a tour, the recording of which will be featured in this podcast. Please note, my recording of the tour is heavily edited and truncated, so do not think you've heard it all, or even the best bits. This is just a taster, so do go and experience it for yourself. I was so impressed with the Glen Scotia tour. It's about an hour of being walked through the production process in, at the risk of sounding like an unoriginal leaflet, an interesting and informative way. 5 stars, would highly recommend. Here's Claire from Glen Scotia explaining why Campbelltown is so important in the history of whiskey.
Welcome to Glen Scotia, everyone. We are one of three of the longest standing working distilleries remaining in Campbelltown. So just ourselves, our friends at Springbank and their sister distillery, Glengyle, as well. However, if you were to roll back the clock to the whiskey heyday, up to 36 legal distilleries here in Campbelltown. That's the legal ones. If you were to count up all the illicit stills that were in bathtubs, hidden in the hillside, in garden sheds, well over 100. So this really earned Campbelltown its reputation as whiskey capital of the world. So running from between sort of early 1830s when we were established right through to the decline of the whiskey industry in Scotland at the end of the 1920s, Campbelltown very much was the place for whiskey. More prominent than your Speyside, Isla, and that came down to two key factors, and that was steam navigation and water as well. So they were kind of critical to the success of the whiskey here. So our harbour, one of the best natural harbours in the world, the steamboats could virtually sail right up to the front doors of the distilleries. So we would bring in malt this way. We also had a coal mine situated at Mackahanish. From there, there was a light railway that ran from Mackahanish into the harbour, and this would bring in the coal, providing cost-effective fuel resource to ship the casks out as well. So these would be shipped to Glasgow, Liverpool. This would take about 9 hours on the steamboats, and again, this was a really key critical transport link for us and the success of whiskey. Another key success factor was our high quality water source. So back at the beginning of the 1830s, around the same time as a lot of the distilleries were opening their doors, so the Excise Act was passed in 1823, which made it legal to produce whiskey. So the Duke of Argyll commissioned Crossall Lough. This is a man-made lough that was built with the sole function of supplying all of the distilleries of that era with their water.
Incidentally, we'll be heading up to Crosshill Lough and Bengullion, where it sits, later in the series to explore its wonderful walking tracks and, if I'm brave enough, its numerous and well-maintained mountain biking trails too. After hearing some of the history, Claire took us through to the grain silo and then on to the mash tun. Both items could be described as massive.
So going back to the process, the grist has been carried upstairs. It is going to meet with that very high quality water in this copper pipe here. We're going to start that mashing process and we're going to increase the temperature of the water throughout to extract as much sweetness, as much sugar from the malt. So for each mash, we are going to do 4 waters. Water number one, we'll charge that in at 66 degrees. So again, the grist is meeting with that hot water here and flooding into the mash tun. We're then going to steer. So this mash tun is operated manually. So everything done the old way, we're using a series of valves and levers to control this. So the mashman will do this manually. We'll steer the blades round and then we'll let it rest for approximately 30 minutes. So we're going to let it brew, stew like a good cup of tea, and then we're going to turn this lever here. This is quite important. It doesn't look all that important because it's just casually sitting here, but this is probably the most critical part of the process. So after that 30 minutes, we're going to gradually drain the mash tun, and this is called the balance. So the liquid is going to drain from here. It's going to travel via this red and yellow pipe under my feet and into the underback here. And this is what we call the wort. So you can see in there, you can take a look, have a nose, you'll get all the aromas there. It's quite a cloudy wort that we are producing here at Glen Scotia. So second water, water number two, we're increasing the temperature by 10 degrees. So we're charging in at 76 degrees this time. Same process again, we'll steer the mash tun, let it rest and drain to the underback. So that's waters one and two going here. Third water, this is the sparge water. So we'll charge this in at 85 degrees. So we're now approaching that boiling hot temperature. And this is what you can see right now as well. So that's currently the water we're on. This water is not going to go to the underback. We're going to recover this and that's going to get pumped outside to our sparge tank where we will reuse this for waters one and two of the next mash. So we're recovering as much flavour, as much sweetness, ensuring that doesn't go to waste, and we're improving the quality with every mash. This method also allows us to reuse heat and reuse energy. So we're doing things as efficiently as we possibly can. Final water, number four. Temperature not important here. You can imagine after those three first waters, what's left of the malt, it's going to be quite clumpy, quite clogged up. This is what we now call the draft. So we want to expel that from the mash tun. So we're going to charge in that final water. That's going to loosen that all up. It's going to be taken outside to our draft tower where a local farmer will then come along and take that away, and that's going to get used as cattle feed. So we're finding a secondary use for any waste wherever we can.
Through to the washbacks to hear about the fermentation, you really start to get a sense of how much time and expertise making whiskey really involves. And then onto the beautiful stills. I'm only going to play you a little bit from this whole section as I said before, you really have to do the tour to hear the good stuff and see and smell the good stuff.
Okay, so this is fermentation, where the magic happens. So we'll get 9 stainless steel washbacks here at Glen Scotia. We've got 6 inside and 3 just on the other side of this wall. So going back to the process, what we have in the underback there, that is our wort. So those first two waters from the mashing are going to get pumped through here and charged into one of the wash bags. So you can see from each wash bag, each one is 25,000 litres. We're just going to fill this to around 15,000 litres, so about 3/4 full. We're not filling it all the way to the top, and that's to allow for the addition of the yeast and that reaction. So if you imagine the yeast that we're adding, it's like Pac-Man. It's going to eat up all of those fermentable sugars, and that's going to produce heat, CO2, and eventually your alcohol. Here we have the classic double copper pot still setup. So these stills have been here since the late 1970s, early 1980s. We've got our wash still slightly larger, 11,800 litres, and the spirit still a little bit smaller, 8,600 litres. You can kind of see on them, they have had a bit of refurbishment over the years, particularly on the swan neck. The kind of natural characteristic of the copper is that over time it's going to thin, break down, wear down, and this will actually release minerals into the spirit, which will enhance the quality as well. So absolutely everything about your stills is going to have an influence over the end spirit. So the size, the shape, the height, the length of the line arm at the top, everything is going to influence that. So our stills here, they're quite heavy, quite dumpy, quite short, and this will produce a very heavy, oily spirit. So if you've done any other distillery tours before, maybe in the Speyside region, you will see their line arms, so the length of their swan necks, they're very, very long and very thin. And this produces a more floral, lighter spirit. But here in Campbelltown, quite oily, quite robust. These stills are heated by a large steam coil. So inside here, they're essentially operated like a giant kettle or bain-marie. Obviously, in the past, it would have been heated by coal and open fire, but health and safety doesn't allow for that now. So we use steam to heat the liquid. We are going to heat it up to about 83, 84 degrees. That will produce the vapor. This is going to rise up into the swan neck, and it's going to travel along the line arm, where it's going to get heavier and heavier. This vapor is then going to meet with very fresh cold water in our condensers. So the two condensers sit behind each still, and this is made up of lots of copper pipes with fresh cold water. When that vapor hits the pipes, it's going to condense back into liquid form, and this will then run back into the distillery. All gravity fed, so we're not pumping anything, it's all naturally flowing back in. And this will run into the spirit still below, where our stillman will record, analyse and monitor the ABV. So we're in the spirit still now, distillation number 2. And from this we are going to take 3 cuts of that spirit run. And that is easy to remember as the head, the heart and the tails. First of all, the head, that's going to run into this bowl here. This will be sitting around 75% ABV, so a little on the high side. We want to bring that down. When this comes in, it will appear quite cloudy, unpure spirit at this point. So we want to take off the heads. It's no use. We're going to apply a lot of steam. We're going to run the stills on a high temperature for about 15 to 20 minutes and take off that head. So that'll take it down from 75% ABV to 73%. When we get to 73, we're going to switch into this left-hand bowl. So we'll turn this lever here, and this is where we're going to collect what we call the heart of the run. This is our new make spirit, what is going to go on to become whiskey. We'll run the still slowly now for probably about 6 hours for this middle cut alone. And that we're going to take that from 73 down to 63% ABV, collecting all of that liquid in the faraway spirit receiver. And that's ready to then go to the final part of the production. When we get to 63, we'll switch back into this right-hand bowl, and this is the tails or the fates. So this will be run down from 63 all the way down to 1%. And that will take about 4 to 4.5 hours to finish off that distillation. Again, not strong enough, so we're going to collect that here. But essentially anything that's too low or too high, it's all being collected in this receiver here. When this is full, about 8,000 litres, all of the liquid here is going to get pumped back up to this charger above our heads, and then all of this will go back in to the spirit still. So that's the process. We're constantly feeding the heads and the tails back in with the low wines, recycling anything that doesn't make that middle cut. And we keep repeating that process over and over. So we'll do heads, hearts, tails, and we keep going.
We were then taken around to the warehouses where the barrels are kept for the aging process. Who knew there were so many different ways to store casks? Well, lots of people apparently, but I didn't, and it was extremely interesting.
Okay, welcome to Whiskey Heaven. This is one of three warehouses that we have here at Glen Scotia. We do three different styles of maturation here. So this is our palletized store. As you can see, the casks are stacked on pallets. They're matured standing up. We've got six casks per pallet, and we're able to stack these six levels high in here. You can see we actually fill from the top as well. So we have the bung on the top of the cask. We're not filling from the side bung here. And this actually physically allows us to get more liquid into the cask. So we're really maximizing that interaction with the wood and getting as much out of the barrel as we possibly can. All of these casks in here are ex-bourbon. So these will go towards fulfilling our core range products. So whether that's double cask, 15-year-old, 10-year-old, 18-year-old, Victoriana, all of these casks in here are ex-bourbon. The other maturation methods we have is our racked warehouse. So that's just across the courtyard. This is a little example of this here. So that's where the casks are lying on their side, maturing the traditional way. Our racked warehouse, we tend to mature all of our finishing casks. So that tends to be our sherry butts, our hogsheads, our rum barrels. You can finish in all sorts. The world really is your oyster. So we use sherry, port, rum. We do a lot of finishing in red wine as well. And we also do some experimental full maturations in different types of casks. So it's not all your bourbon, your American oak. That will just give you a different quality, a different aroma, colour, flavour. The world is your oyster when it comes to maturing whiskey. Third and final maturation method is our dunnage. Dunnage loosely translates as earth. So that the idea with that is to mature the casks as low to the ground as possible. And this is said to give a much more even maturation. You can imagine in here, in the summer months, the temperature variance between the ground level to the top of the warehouse will be quite significant. So you're going to have a different kind of quality of liquid at the end of the maturation. We don't rotate the casks in here. Once they're in, they're in. So we just accept here that every cask is unique. That's the fun part, isn't it? You're going to get something totally different from each cask.
Thank you so much to Claire and Glen Scotia for allowing me to record the tour. I hope to be catching up with Ian McAllister in a coming episode to talk about his links to the Kintyre Way, as well as his role as head distiller at Glen Scotia. And because it's me, I'm always happy to catch up with his two beautiful Weimaraner dogs as well. Glen Scotia, along with Springbank and Glengyle, also in Campbelltown, offer lots of tours, tastings and other events throughout the year. So be sure to check them all out if you're passing through or staying for a few days while you walk the Kintyre Way. Music for the episode is by Strange Crazy, and you can find further information about walking the Kintyre Way at thekintyreway.com.